Welcome to OU.org and www.etshalom.com. My name is Yitzhak Etshalom, and it's my pleasure to be studying Sefer Shmuel with you. We are now on Shmuel Bet Perek Tet. And in Perek Chet, we read about the climax of David's military successes as he conquered all of his enemies around him. And indeed, we pointed out that he revisited, as it were, pieces of his past, personal past and familial past, and put things, what we might say, into the proper perspective. In any case, there is one small item left from the legacy of Shaul that needs to be taken care of, and that will be the focus of this very small and compact Perek Tet that we are studying today. After which we will read a series of events, and I'll leave that until the next Perek, but a series of events which will lead to the near downfall of David's monarchy. In any case, we are still at the apex. Vayomer David, Hachi yesh od asher notar leveit Shaul ve'asei mo chesed bavur Yehonatan. David asked the question, is there anyone left of Beit Shaul, of the house of Shaul, in which case I will act kindly with him on account of Yehonatan? Now, bavur Yehonatan itself is a little bit of a strange phrase, because there are two different motivations that David theoretically has here in acting on behalf of Beit Shaul. One is the brit that David made with Yehonatan, that was reiterated several times, to wit that David would care for Yehonatan, mutual support, etc. And on the other hand, the agreement that David made to Shaul, that when Shaul said, I know that you're going to be the king, I have one request, that you not wipe out my seed. So here, if David is asking, is there anybody left of Beit Shaul, then it should be Vaseimo Chesed Bavur Shaul. I should do Chesed with him on account of Shaul. If, on the other hand, he wants to do Chesed on behalf of Yonatan, as part of the brit with Yonatan, then we would have to say, is there anybody left of Beit Yonatan? Which will be who it turns out to be, of course, as we already had foreshadowed in Perek Dalet. One possible resolution to this contradiction is, or really conundrum, is that David is motivated, and was motivated in his original agreement with Shaul, to act on behalf of Shaul, meaning to act to protect the house of Shaul, specifically because of his brit with Yonatan. In other words, when Shaul said to him that, please, the one kindness I request is that you not wipe out my seed, David agreed to it because of his love for Yonatan, not because of anything else. Because within the rubric of David's feelings towards Shaul, where the man he really despises, but the office he reveres, there is no reason for him to make any commitment to keep Shaul's seed alive. Once HaKadosh Baruch Hu replaces Shaul with David, that should be the end of Beit Shaul. And nonetheless, David here wants to act on behalf of the remnants, or to maintain a memory of Beit Shaul, but it's all driven by his love for Yonatan. Well, the Beit Shaul Eved, right? There's still an Eved, a servant, a slave of Beit Shaul. Ushmo Tziva, that's his name. Aikraulo el David. And so now that he was summoned to David, they got to figure, if after all of this, and David has finally settled in and brought the Aron up and has conquered all of his enemies and has really achieved what Shaul did not achieve, perhaps he's now going to clean up the remnants of Shaul. And you can imagine that Tziva must be somewhat frightened when he was a servant in Shaul's house, is now summoned to David. So he says, are you Tziva? He says, yes, I am. I am your servant. Something very ironic in the same pasuk, calling him an Eved of Shaul and then Eved David. The word Efes in modern Hebrew means zero or none. It's unclear what it means, although in context here it's clear what it means. Is there anyone left? Are there none left? Anybody of Beit Shaul? Now, he doesn't say what his motivation is. I want to do chesed for him, which itself is a very bizarre thing, something would be unaccustomed, something that anybody would be surprised to hear, that the new king wants to do kindness with the family of the old king. On the other hand, David was married into the family of the old king. Mechir Raglaim. And Siva then tells the king that there is one son left of Yonatan who is lame. And if you recall, we heard the story back in Perek Dalad, that Mephibosheth, or Mephibal, who was the son of Yonatan, was 5 years old. It was a young boy when he heard when the news came that his father had died, and his nanny who ran away dropped him, and he became lamed, and that was Mephibal, or Mephibosheth. Vayomer lo hamelech efohu. This, by the way, the end of Pasuk Gimel brings together both concerns that I mentioned in Pasuk Aleph. Now David is able to do kindness for a member of Shaul's house who is a son of Yonatan, and thus it's purely for Yonatan. Vayomer efohu. Where is he? Vayomer tzival hamelech hinehu beit machir ben Amiel b'lodvar. He says he's in a place called Lodvar, which is on the other side of the Jordan, in the house of Machir ben Amiel. Now you ask me, how do I know that Lodvar is on the other side of the Jordan? We'll see later on in Perek Tetvav, when David takes refuge on the other side of the Jordan, when he runs away from Avshalom, he is greeted by three local wealthy and important people, one of whom is the same Machir ben Amiel from the city of Lodvar. So David sent and had him brought. Now again, the whole time, we know what David's saying, we know what David means, but we don't know what Siva and Mephibosheth are thinking, or what, for that matter, what Michal ben Amiel is thinking. Machir ben Amiel is evidently some sort of friend of the house of Shaul, and that, as a result of that, is willing to take his grandson in and keep him there. Now David is the king, so he summoned him. We don't know what's going to happen. Is Mephibal going to be executed? So we get the whole Yichus. Mephibosheth ben Yonatan ben Shaul to David. And that brings up the tension that exists here. On the one hand, he's a remnant of Beit Shaul. On the other hand, he's the son of Yonatan. And we have the same thing just said with Siva. David said his name, and he said, here I am, your servant. But remember, he's prostrate in front of David. David, al tira. And these are the words that we were waiting to hear the whole time. Do not fear. Ki aso ese imcha chesed. I will act kindly with you. Bavur Yehonatan avicha. Because of your father. Vashivoti lecha. And now David says what we were told he was thinking in Pasuk Aleph. Vashivoti lecha et kol sdei Shaul avicha. And I will return Shaul's personal holdings. Shaul never expanded beyond his personal holdings, but his field. Vata tocha lecha moshochani tamid. And you will also be member of my household, meaning that you will eat from my table. The king will support him. And this, of course, is another twist that is interesting. He bows down and he says, what is your servant? Why me? That you have turned to a dead dog like me. Now, why is he a dead dog? Is he a dead dog because he's lame? Possibility one. Is he a dead dog because he's from Shaul's family? Possibility two. Is he a dead dog because he, as the only remnant of Shaul's family, he would be hunted, and David has the opportunity to kill him. But whatever it is, Mephibosheth seems to feel, or at least presents himself as if saying, that he's not worthy of any of this, and he's asking, why is David turning to him? Vayikra melech al tziva, na'ar Shaul, and now tziva is not called Eved Shaul, but na'ar Shaul. V'merlav kol asher yal Shaul l'chol beito natati l'ven adonecha. I've given everything that belongs to Shaul, which normally should become mine. Witness as an example. The beginning of Perek Chet in Megillat Esther, that Achashverosh gave all of Beit Haman to Esther. All of Shaul's holdings should become David's, and did become David's, but now David is giving them back to Ben Adonecha. V'avadta lo ata adama ata uvanecha v'avadecha. Now notice, Tziva is such an important fellow that he has sons and he has his own servants. And you will work the land for him. In other words, I'm giving you the land is sort of a trust, and you will work the land for him. This will come back later in a strange form towards the end of the Sefer. And this is how you're going to feed him. In other words, David said, I'm going to feed you. And now how am I going to feed you? I'm giving you this field, and I'm charging Tziva with being your servant, who will then bring the produce from the field and feed you. He'll eat on my table. That is evidently what he means. Parenthetically, Tziva himself has 15 sons, 20 slaves, so we're talking about a big workforce out there on a field which we would have to suppose is a big field owned by Shaul, and so Mephibosheth is going to be doing pretty well. Kechol asher tzava adonai ha-melech et avdo ken ya'aseh avdecha. And so Tziva says, exactly what you've commanded, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And now the language is a little bit strange, because it indicates Mefiboshet will be eating on my table, is what Tziva is saying. In any case, whether this is now going back to what David is saying, or whether he's paraphrasing what David said, unclear, but either way, David is taking care of Mephibosheth's needs by giving him the entire estate of Shaul and charging Tziva with himself and his sons and his servants working in that field. Now, if you're Tziva, and this is a question that is critical now because of what will happen later, if you're Tziva, how do you feel about this? Do you feel like, oh, I was a member of the rejected household and now I'm being brought in and charged with an important duty on behalf of the accepted household? Or on the other hand, as Tziva saying beforehand, I was somewhat retired, I had these sons and servants to work for me, and now I have to work for this kid who's the grandson of my original master? Really unclear. Mephibosheth ben Katan u'shmo Micha, we find out that Mephibosheth himself has a son. Chomashav beit Tziva avadim Mephibosheth. And now we're told that all of Tziva's household are avadim de Mephibosheth. So, again, we find out that these 20 servants and 15 sons are all working for Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth yosheb b'shalayim k'al shulchan ha-melech tamid ho-ochel v'seach shtei raglav. And this is all foreshadowing what's going to happen later on with the interaction with David, Tziva, and Mephibosheth in the aftermath of a rebellion that will take place in several parakim, but whose seeds are sown in the very next parak, as we will see. In any case, the text reminds us of these things, that Mephibosheth lives in Yerushalayim because he is eating at the king's table, which, by the way, now moves us in a different direction. It says that really the king is feeding him, and he really eats at the king's table. And besides that, he's being enriched by the field that has been given to him that originally belonged to Shaul, and these 35 young men working to produce for the field, all of which goes into Mephibosheth's pocket. And he is lame in both feet, which means he cannot get around. That will play an important role in what will come up later. But suffice for now, this relatively short chapter, and one that is far more significant for what it says for later than what it says for right now, Perek Tet, and we will study in the next podcast Perek Yod, where things will take a decidedly different turn for David. Until then, everyone should have a wonderful day. I look forward to continuing to study Sefer Shmuel with you online. Proceed to Perek Yod.